For April the 27th, 2018, we talk about the Nintendo Labo, Valve's acquisition of Campo Santo, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 239. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Back after a kind of week off.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, you guys did the video thing. We didn't have an audio show on the feed last time.
That's true. Video killed the podcasting star. And doesn't have that ring to it.
Yeah. And also, we have David back. Hey, David.
Yo.
Hey, David.
Yeah.
Who?
David. He's the other guy. He was the third voice. He was right
we
after
didn't
you.
Didn't actually invite him. He just kind of wanted to
in. Didn't we? We confirmed either on the stream or in previous episodes that there are listeners who have joined in No Jala recently who have just don't know the show with David on it. So
yeah. No, it's
say hello to the world, man.
Welcome back,
hello,
David.
Hello, world.
Yeah. You're because you moved to San Francisco. Yeah. No, but you're...
That was... Wow.
What?
It is now officially possible to do both geek joke and dad joke.
Oh, yeah. No, it's only reasonable. No, you've been getting ready, getting acclimated to your new job.
Yep.
And we're happy to have you back.
Yeah, happy to be back. Pretty excited.
Yeah.
And you had a conference last week.
Yes, convention. I did. Yeah, we were up at in Milwaukee at the Midwest Gaming Classic. And that was a good deal of fun. Not to be talk about the weather guy. We were pretty sure that we were going to be snowed in and would turn into kind of like a Shining situation. it kind of sucked because there were some people who were intending to come up, like from Chicago or come over, any name a city that is near Milwaukee. They were not able to because of the weather. So that is a bummer.
Isn't kind of the point of Milwaukee that like every city on the continent is near Milwaukee?
Maybe. I don't know. All that I know about Milwaukee is there is a statue of Arthur Fonzarelli by the Riverwalk, which is called the Bronze Fonz. and also its name is Algonquin for the good land.
How about that?
Yeah, that's from Wayne's World. I don't know if that is true.
A complete tangent, but I keep seeing all these news stories for some game that's coming out called like The Good Life or something. Has anyone else seen these stories?
Crowdfunded game by the guy who did Deadly Premonition.
Yes, it's a cat RPG.
Am I the only one that like every time I hear that title, I just think of like the horrifying Twilight Zone episode?
Oh yeah, where people get wished into the cornfield. It's a good life.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And so now I will think of that.
Yeah. That's
before
that's
I was thinking of cats.
Now
I'm thinking of this.
Here.
Unacceptable.
Oh man, how are you, Ben?
I'm doing okay. I think I mentioned this pre-show, but I was feeling a little sick earlier this week, but I'm feeling better now. There was a Magic pre-release over the weekend. I went 4-0, so I felt awesome about that. But, yeah.
Did you win cards? Were the stakes cards?
Yeah, I won 3 packs of cards, which I will say. Yeah.
Did you use your card holder?
I did. I've used that consistently for a while now, so that was a good recommendation. So
you have a card.
I like to imagine that this is some sort of like anime-esque, like perhaps holster or sheath for the cards.
It's not that cool.
That is unfortunate.
So backstory is my mom asked Dennis for Christmas present advice. Ended up being really good. She got a Magic card like carrying case where you can like carry decks and carry dice and stuff like that. So I actually use it. So it's...
No, there were multiple levels of present advice inception because I knew you liked Magic, but I don't know anything about Magic.
Right.
So I asked someone on the Slack, and I'm so sorry if you're listening. I I'm sure it's dropped, you know, like that Slack has eaten that conversation since. But I just posted into the Hearthstone channel, like, hey, who knows Magic 2? And got advice from someone. So there's three levels of inception there to get you your present across continents and worlds.
Thank you, everyone involved in that singular Christmas present.
I was picturing like the those quarter dispensers that people who work at arcades used to wear. You know,
just dispenses magic cards instead.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you just invented Yu-Gi-Oh.
Oh shit! I have some letters of apology to write. It could happen to anybody.
Unless you're watching the abridged version, which is great.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Dennison, how are you?
I'm good. It is nice out, and the kids are both of the age that they can run around pretty unfettered outside. So we have just been like all over the outdoors.
Nice. Wait, but isn't that also nuts. The age that they can like get away?
Yeah, and jump in front of cars.
The trick is making them not want to.
Yeah. But so it has been a fun couple of days. We have hosted friends the past two weekends in a row, which is fun. And then I don't think I've talked with any of you guys about this, but we're going to continue that trend. We're actually hosting an immigrant from Nepal.
Ooh.
For an indeterminate amount of time starting this weekend. So we are in a hosting mood.
Nice.
What's the backstory? How did this come about?
Yeah, we felt just as part of some stuff we were doing through church, we're like we're feeling called to like open up our room.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a guest bedroom that we don't really use, but we're like, what would it look like to kind of, I don't know, you know, offer that up to just be like put that out there? And immediately we were connected to someone again through church who they work for the anti-sex trafficking ministry that is in Nepal.
Mm-hmm.
And their brother had just immigrated to the United States on a diversity visa. He has a wife and kid, and he's trying to like get his feet under him to kind of start a new life in the U.S. But he was in New York, which is the worst possible place to get your feet under you and the worst possible place to bring a wife and kid once you do. And weirdly enough, Cincinnati has a pretty good Nepali community.
Okay.
And so it was just like it all fell directly into place. And he's coming, yeah, in a couple days here.
That is fantastic.
If you get a chance, Nepali's food is amazing.
Is that right? Can you liken it to something that's a little more mainstream?
It's basically Indian food without all the vegetarian nonsense. And unfortunately, Jala isn't here for me to poke at that. But yeah, it's basically vegetarian food, or rather Indian food with just more emphasis on meat.
Does it have something to do with just the like the elevation, like just vegetation is not as plentiful? I'm asking you for more information than you have. I'm sorry. I'm just
I think the first of it is just like, you know, the countries are really near each other, which is why it's similar. And then I'm not sure my understanding is just that like Nepal has, you know, historically had a big like livestock tradition or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're still predominantly Hindu, which I think is like the main reason that India tends to have so much vegetarianism. So I don't think it's necessarily like a cultural thing.
Hmm.
Exactly. But I'm not an expert.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. That'll be a fun angle to explore that I hadn't thought of before is see if this guy likes cooking. His name is Binod. So see if Binod likes cooking at all.
Yeah.
Which will be cool. So that's we've just been in hosting mode for a couple weeks now, and that's going to continue on into the future.
Well, that is fantastic and very generous.
Yeah, I mean, selfishly, we kind of like the idea of Luke and Milo growing up in a home where there's different cultures, different colors of skin, different ways of thinking. Like that's very attractive to us. So mm-hmm. So we get that benefit out of it. Yeah. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. We're excited. So yeah. That is, there's just no other place to stick that hadn't come up before. So mm-hmm. There you go.
Nice. Yeah, well, we've all been very busy in the past couple weeks. Oh, which makes it all the more important to get to the show, to get back into the to the routine, all of that. So why don't we get started with the regular kind of show, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and let's get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. I'm going to open us up with something real simple, because this is follow-up to a previous story, and also it is a classic, patented Cole regurgitates release details. So, everybody's been talking; it's on everybody's lips. This Dark Souls remaster re-release kind of nonsense, right? Coming out to all the major systems, your PCs, your PS4s, your Xboxes One, stuff like that. The one that I was really excited about was the Switch version, because sign me up to get that thing on a portable system. However, the Switch version is not going to be coming out on May 25th like the other versions, and the Solaire Amiibo has been pushed back as well. Instead, they're coming out this summer. Indeterminate. Good.
I can't remember if I posted this on Slack last week, but I had the thought of posting this with saying, this is what happens when we skip a week of podcasting.
You did.
All right.
Yeah. No, this is the punishment.
But on the plus side, you guys get a Solaire Amiibo, which the other consoles and stuff don't get.
True. But the Solaire Amiibo is like crazy sold out.
Yeah, they're going to make like three of them.
Yeah, I thought the pre-order sold out like right away. I think they're GameStop exclusive too, so it limits that limits the stock and availability more. Mm-hmm. So I am not going to break my back to get a little Solaire statuette. It'd be nice, but I'm not gonna.
We'll see how long that willpower holds out.
We'll see. There's also like several GameStops near me, so like that may be like an afternoon trip, like going around and seeing if places have it. So,
I also feel like, once it gets to the secondary market, it's going to very quickly become an issue where it's like I could spend an unreasonable amount of money to get this on eBay. Or I could, like, commission someone to make me, like, a bronze, like, you know, statue of this or something.
Yeah. Or go to, like go to Etsy or something like that.
Yeah,
The trick would be if Solaire is added as a character in the Switch version of Smash Brothers.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
What is that?
Oh, like, you just unlock different features and stuff with your Solaire Amiibo.
Smash Brothers isn't really an important game. No one here cares about it.
I mean, not the current ones.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say, you think you're like,
damn it, it's impossible to bait Ben.
I don't know. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how you think you're sticking it to Ben by talking like that, but
yeah, I actually,
we're going to deal more with that later on.
had a conversation kind of to that effect with Jala yesterday, just discussing like, the fact that my only exposure to Fire Emblem was Marth from Smash Bros.
Oh, yeah.
And then her rattling off like several other Fire Emblem characters have been added to it, and me being shocked that they made Smash Bros. Games after Melee.
Oh, man.
Most tournament, if you only follow Smash tournaments, then that's not a surprising opinion. But
right.
Well, I mean, at tournaments, isn't like Super Ultra M or whatever they call it?
No, it's Melee. Melee is the one that everybody goes.
Oh, I thought there was some like fan made one.
Maybe. If I'm telling tales out of school, I apologize. Ben, is it all Melee all the time?
There is a fan made one, but I forget what the difference is. I would need to look it up. It's either like a fan made one of like Brawl or something like that, or there might be one that they did in Melee. But I do know that they like play on analog TVs and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know,
for like lag reasons.
Yeah.
So the usual line about delays applies here. You know, the platitude, nothing original. It's better that they delay it and get it right than release it and have it be broken. Especially with the Dark Souls fan base, if they fuck this up on the Switch, then it will never ever be forgotten. So I can understand the instinct.
as a quick update, it is a modification of Brawl.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is the least favorite, am I correct?
Well, it's actually just linked in the Slack. It's apparently they took Brawl and changed all the things people didn't like from like the transition from Melee.
Right, right. So they took Brawl and they apply the no fun allowed in Smash Brothers.
They Melee'd Brawl.
They Melee'd Brawl. Okay. that is such a weird sentence. Oh man.
Luckily, we have something we do with weird sentences.
Yeah. So, Ben, what is the story that you brought?
Yeah, I got a fun follow-up. So a couple weeks ago, we talked about how Valve claimed that they were going to put out games this year. They're back in the business of making games. It appears that they are cunningly doing this. They announced recently, as in like a couple days ago, that they acquired Campo Santo, the makers of Firewatch. They're gonna work under them. They're gonna still be their own development team, mm-hmm. but they're gonna release their new game in the Valley of Gods under Valve. So mm-hmm. Valve is technically putting out a game this year.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah, you know, good on you, Valve. You did it. But
like, guys, I'm a brilliant painter, and I'm commissioning someone to do some work for me.
we can't get our shit together to make something, but we have a shitload of money. I'm honestly shocked that it took them this long to figure that out.
But I mean, that's pretty interesting, though. It's like, if Valve could buy one company, this was a company that they bought.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty interesting, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so if they are going to be brought in to consult on or actually make stuff for Valve that is under the Valve banner, it speaks well to them possibly focusing more on single-player narrative stuff, which is what they've been sorely lacking mm-hmm. for the past decade, 11 years,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? So I'm pretty jazzed about that. Not decade, like Portal 2 came out in 2011. But are you trying to say Portal 2 doesn't exist?
Portal 2 was when just I was in college, up. Wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
he's just rounding up.
Yeah, yeah. They,
okay, I'm just apparently really bad at math and or dates.
No.
Portal 2 was more than a decade.
Yeah, I said... Yeah, it was 2011. I said a decade thinking that was their last big thing was the Orange Box, but that is categorically untrue. Regardless, yeah. My point stands. This is a good team. I like the people there. There's a little bit of a like less than 6 degrees of separation because they're also the Idle Thumbs guys. So congratulations to them.
What do we know about Valve's ability to not fuck this up, essentially? Like, do we have anything that we can look at to say that, hey, they know how to stay out of the business of something that's working?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they did it with Steam, Portal. That's basically how they run it. You know, just as long as you keep throwing money at us, you can be on Steam.
they did this with Portal, where they picked up the guy who like made like a Portal mechanic for his like demo for a senior project, and they like added him to the team and then let him make a game. You know, but then they added people to it.
As far as I can tell, they are not being assimilated into like the Valve corporate structure. I don't believe that they're moving up to Seattle. I think they are staying like at an independent acting studio.
Okay, cool. What was that game that you're referencing, Ben? Portal 2, or was that the Portal Bridge Builder?
Portal 1. What's the Portal Bridge Builder?
Oh, well, there's like a game out that's like essentially like a 2D physics based bridge building sim that is also Portal.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. Did I get really high and imagine this?
No, that's crazy, actually right? A thing. Yeah.
Okay.
It was just 420, so.
what Ben is referring to is Portal was technically an acqui-hire. They saw a student project by people out of DigiPen, a game called Narbacular Drop that had, you know, kind of a rudimentary version of the Portal mechanic, hired them and basically gave them the resources to make it into something to, you know, to complement the Orange Box.
God, okay, so, I thought you were saying that came after the original.
Yeah.
And we now know that one person has been hired from DigiPen.
I mean, I don't know. I have no idea what DigiPen's reputation is outside of Valve.
It was supposed to be pretty bad.
Yeah.
I thought it was like fly-by-night, like TV college. level. Yeah,
you might be thinking of Full Sail. That's definitely
Full Sail. Oh no, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're definitely thinking of Full Sail. Yeah, like Digipen like had funding from Nintendo and stuff because they were there in the Redmond area.
My bad.
So congrats to these guys. So to answer your question more directly, Dennis, because of how hands off Valve is, I really think that this is just a money changing hands kind of thing. Yeah. So cool.
It is kind of a good idea too, because it's like to grab up a studio that's like doing modern game practices, game making practices, if like people on the team like haven't made a game in like 5 or 6 years, and that might be good.
Get people up to speed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Neat. So let's see here. Dennis, what you got?
Yeah, so I've got an update on the next game from Quantic Dream and David Cage, which is Detroit Become Human. They showed it off.
Become Human.
Yes.
Every time
it's
I
better
hear
than
that
Beyond
name.
Two Souls. The name game is improving. but so they did an extended demo, and there were a bunch of insights that came out of that. And this, I made the comparison to my Cincinnati boys in Slack, that this is like the Cincinnati Bengals. They know how to do just enough to make you hope. Even when you've convinced yourself that you are dead inside and you're just not going to care anymore, they will find a way to make you feel hope and then instantly dash it. So this article, this demo that they did brought me into the feel hope stage, and I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Did you?
See, for me, it's generally long enough for me to realize that they said David Cage, not Nicolas Cage. I would pay good money for a Nicolas Cage game.
I mean, let's there's that meme like, Marvel says Infinity War is the greatest crossover event of our time. If we get Nicolas Cage starring in a David Cage game, oh my gosh, two cages. Beyond two cages.
Two cages that cannot be caged.
Uncaged.
Oh God.
Cage uncaged.
Did you? I mean, this might be getting into the grind. Did you play the demo?
I didn't. I didn't know a demo was out. Okay.
Okay.
No, I thought this was like a closed door event.
Maybe. It's
if you know of a demo I don't, then there may be one out. One I read was definitely closed door.
I may have misinterpreted an article that I read.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. This was a closed door demo, so they invited in some media partners, let them play about 3 hours of the game, and there are a couple things in here that just are really good ideas that I'm happy to see them doing, and give me that hope that I'm so afraid to have. The big one that I wanted to talk about was the fact that every level allows you to see a flowchart style map of all the decisions that there are to make.
Huh.
Within that piece of the story. And this is
like
a huge
beforehand, afterhand?
I think it's during. From what I read, you could look it up during, or maybe immediately after and then during upon replays. This is a huge, huge departure from this studio's philosophy, where before they wanted to, tell you as little as possible about what was behind the curtain. They wanted to make you forget that a curtain was there. And you kind of knew that everything you were doing affected things, but they were very cagey about what exactly went into that. And they just had the realization that is a bad idea, that is less fun than being able to see all the decisions. And really there's not a huge, consequence, or you're not losing a lot
by being
able to clearly see the decisions. In fact, it gives the moments where you are making decisions more weight. That's very encouraging. I read that. I was like, you know what? That is 100% true. I would love to have this in any of the story-based games that I play. In the Telltale games, you'll get the little doodle thing that pops up and says, so-and-so will remember that. But you don't really know how to trace that thread through.
Yeah.
They always struck me as vaguely threatening.
Yeah, no, exactly. They gave a specific example when playtesting Beyond Two Souls. Or maybe it was Heavy Rain, that someone would play through a section and just horribly screw it up and see like 10% of the content that they could have gotten to in that scene.
Right.
And then you ask them like, how'd it go? And they're like, oh, good. I think I got to everything. And then they're frustrated later on.
I love how their takeaway is not like, let's make better paced and designed games. It's let's just show them how screwed up things are.
Yeah.
Let's just give you a very clear diagram of this steaming pile of what's it.
Like, I feel like the next logical application or step is just when you go to, like, highlight one of the options, it just plays the, like, operation bat noise.
Yeah. So that was encouraging. You know, you can also then kind of jump to key decision moments, which so that, you know, the worry is like, oh, then people will look at this map and metagame and only go the path that is optimal for what they're trying for. Mm-hmm. But the way I've always played these games, I've never gone back through a Telltale game or a Heavy Rain or anything like that. Or if I have, it's because I'm going to a very specific point where I was curious to see what else would happen.
Right, right.
And it feels like they have realized, okay, we're not going to fight you on that. In fact, we're going to enable it. And we'll just trust you to, like, play, you know, play your experience the first time through. And I think most people will, you know, fairly easily hold themselves accountable to, like, no, I'm going to, you know, not just look at this map the entire time.
Yeah.
And then you can easily go back and see what you quote unquote missed or what could have been different afterwards, which at that point, that's all you want to do anyway. So yeah. I absolutely love that decision.
Yeah.
See, I would love this to get forward to, like, what I wish he would do with his games is just make them be like an hour long and, you know, $15 game, hour long, but, you know, you play through it like five times.
Yeah.
Yeah, super dense. I think we've talked about that on the show before, that's the ideal scenario for a lot of us.
Do it like Way of the Samurai.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Someone also sat Cage down and put him through media training because he did a much better job handling some of the questions about kind of, you know, depictions of violence in his game and parallels to racial tensions that he's kind of touching on.
Right.
I don't think he knocked it out of the park, but it was certainly better handled than the last time around, which ignited a bit of a media fracas.
Yeah, yeah. I was definitely going to buy Detroit Become Human, mostly, you know, out of kind of a morbid sense of curiosity. Like, I didn't expect it to be good, but, like, it was going to be entertaining at the very least, right? But then, like, I heard a bunch of stuff. So, like, to the media training thing, like, there's just, like, apparently Quantic Dream is just a really shitty place to work if you're a woman. Like, there are all kinds of, like, weird allegations out there. Like, they have actually turned around and started suing French media for reporting on this kind of stuff, you know. And so, like, I don't know that I want to give them my money or my attention. So I need to, like, get acquainted with that. I need to, like, figure out how I feel. I may end up doing, like, a Redbox kind of thing.
Yeah, it's you know, it just adds to the price of the game, right? Where it's like, okay, well, now I've got to do due diligence to make sure I'm not supporting a horrible person.
Right.
Which,
right.
Okay, so if it was $40 before, now it's $40 in 2 hours of time sifting through negative media, which is exhausting.
Yeah.
So, you know, your own personal line for when it's just not worth it is kind of up to you. But it is headed in an encouraging direction. If he really wants to make it easy on everyone on that front, he'll just completely ruin it in the next interview, and then we can all safely ignore it.
Then we can all just write it off. Yeah.
But for now, signs of life, signs of promise. Mm-hmm.
As far as the game itself goes.
As far as the game itself goes, yes.
Yeah.
All other stuff aside, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Well, I am still morbidly curious. Mm-hmm. And like that does sound like a good idea. Just lay the mechanics of the thing bare. No pun intended, I guess. Or I guess pun intended. I don't know. I'm ambivalent about whether or not
I don't know anymore. Cole, you know what it's like to be a dad.
Are you being sarcastic, dude? I don't even know anymore.
It just kind of happens.
Just keep them guessing, you know. Never explain, never apologize.
Speaking of robots who do or don't know if they're human, David, what is this article that you shared about Westworld?
So this may or may not be a disappointing take from this article,
mm-hmm.
Because the sole reason this article is here is because check out that first image that is clearly a Warframe.
What?
The half-made...
Oh, in the back?
What do they call them, host? in Westworld, the half-made host behind the main character is very Frame-esque.
Yeah, okay. That is clearly a Warframe.
Oh yeah, yeah. So like the big no-faced white statue behind Bernard. Okay, mm-hmm. Is that really it? Just you
yes,
find a Warface.
Really, it
doesn't look like anything to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question, or no, where you ask us a question and then we answer it. Sorry, I was on autopilot there. but there's a twist to this, Dennis. What was the twist that you asked? Nice people.
Yeah,
to ask us.
Apparently people like it when we make things harder on them.
Yeah.
Don't understand it, but I'll play into it. This is a free play where you guys get to ask us questions. But I put a focus or a premium on would you rather questions.
Mm-hmm.
So not all of these will be would you rather, but I said bonus points for would you rather questions. So
yeah.
If you did a would you rather, mark experience.
Yes, please keep track of your own character sheets. We cannot do it for you.
Yeah, and so. Obviously everyone should have been playing along this entire time. If you're not, I don't know why you listen.
We can't help you. because this is free play, I will act as the game master here. So I'll get us started here with Sam, who says, would you rather be immortal except for starvation, but the only food that provides any sustenance is wet cat food, or have the ability to master any fighting game in a matter of minutes, but whenever you speak, your voice is replaced by soothing ocean sounds?
I'm failing to see a downside in that second one.
So, I feel like for the first one, I feel like it's relevant. I actually spent a significant portion of this weekend, food and ingredient like shopping and nutrition fact checking, with the explicit goal of like finding some meal that I can just, cook for myself and eat indefinitely.
Okay. So just a monoculture of food for your belly.
Yeah. Well, just like, I don't know, for me, like I'm not very good at remembering to eat. And okay. So, there's a very large degree to which like just practically getting food is like more about calories than it is about the food. So
so you're on Silicon Valley. Does Soylent not work for you?
I'm not big on the salmonella. Also, it's like nutrition profile is kind of crap.
Okay.
But,
okay.
My current go-to.
David, I need to know. I'm waiting for you to say you bought cat food, and I just need to know right now. I can't.
Wait. we can't.
I actually sincerely considered the dog food. That's actually true story. It actually has a excellent nutritional profile.
It'll help you maintain a very glowing coat.
Well, and no, I mean it's basically to get super cynical, dog food is basically what you get if when you have a food where people are paid based on how healthy does it make the eater, as opposed to how much high fructose corn syrup can we shove in it?
Okay.
So like, it's actually probably better for you than most foods.
Okay.
I'll buy it. I've actually worked with some dog food producers, and there is a very high quality nutritional profile to their foods.
Good enough for Paul Newman.
That's
good enough for us.
You're freaking insane.
Yeah.
To be fair, I did not do that. And this was the like Whole Foods dog food, so I feel like that should count.
So that's hoity-toity.
Was at least luxury great. Dog food.
Oh man,
is this wet dog food or is it kibble?
This was one of them. Actually, what I really was most tempted is this was one of them that like appeared to just be like somewhat like freeze-dried meat type of a thing.
Okay.
So I was partially just like kind of interested in like if the only ingredient in this is meat, like but it's dog food, does that make it like does that count?
Sam, I bet you didn't realize you're gonna be the only question on the show.
Yeah.
Tonight.
Yeah. Also no grind. Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea what kind of laws and regulations go into dog food. I would just I would encourage you to stay the course on your decision not to do that. Yeah, no. So the second one, the instantly master every fighting game, but have your voice replaced with soothing ocean sounds. There are plenty of ways to get around non-verbally. It would necessitate a change in career, though.
For you,
for me, right?
I don't know. I feel like it depends. Like if you could still speak, but somehow your speech was like the platonic ideal of soothing ocean sounds, I feel like there would be a market for that.
There probably would, but I wouldn't be able to comment on, I mean, okay, well, this might be a special version of hell to be able to play a game we'd be very good at, but not be able to talk about it.
It's Street Fighter ASMR.
Oh, see, I was more thinking like you could speak and like thousands of people will listen, but they will all fall asleep.
Oh, I don't know how that's any different than what happens
like
for me now.
That's like a supervillain power. You could like rob banks with that.
Yeah. I just to go around to the first one. He does say that it's the only food that provides sustenance, not the only food you can eat. So theoretically, you could get that stuff blended into whatever you want. And
hot sauce. Lots of hot sauce to cover that taste.
Yeah, I just like wet cat food bugs me. I've never tasted it, but just on a texture level, you know, I'm gonna have to go with the soothing ocean sounds.
I would go with the wet cat food because I like the idea of immortality, but you can call it off at any point. Albeit a painful way.
Yeah.
So what it's worth, Jala. Although he is still here in spirit and pointed out that cats are obligate carnivores.
Mm-hmm.
So as a vegan, that really wouldn't fly. And also suggests that perhaps she could simply sleep with her mouth open and soothe herself to sleep.
Oh, did everybody who cares to give an answer, give an answer?
It's ocean sounds and fighting games for me.
Oh, okay. No. So we're split. Jack writes, which would you rather be limited to having the choice of playing for the remainder of your life, your absolute favorite game and no others, or the current as of today, as of when he wrote this, the current catalog of games that have received Abject Suffering episodes and no others? So one game that scratches every single one of your itches, versus roughly at this point right now, if you include the Exquisite Sufferings, something approaching just shy of 300 games that are renowned for being bad. However, and this is this is the trick, Abject Suffering is not just about bad games, it can also include weird games.
I was going to say that there cannot have been 250 uniformly bad games.
Right.
There's got to be a couple of ones in there.
No. Humanity can definitely make at least 250 horrible things.
What's the best game on Abject Suffering?
That's tough. Best is hard to say. Like the games that we've gotten the most enjoyment out of, something probably like American Truck Simulator / European Truck Simulator, Bad Mojo. Those are very good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I feel like one data point, which is basically my only data point here, is that the Slack was recently discussing the fact that the past season of Abject Suffering was apparently the summer of cum.
No, that was 2015.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just like that may, depending on what you're into, that could be a vote for or against.
Well, also that had nothing to do with the games. That had everything to do with just, I don't know, wanting to think and talk about cum a lot.
Yeah, sometimes a word gets stuck in your head and it just.
But no, that's just because it's funny all around. Yeah, so I would go Abject Suffering. I would say, just if the Exquisite Sufferings are included. That is 300. That is 300 games. There is definitely a lot to do. There's definitely a lot to do in that. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I'd have to look at how long. Like, I don't know if I've played 300 plus games in my life so far. Like, they're certainly not in my Steam library.
You would be surprised.
Let's see. I've got 96 games in my Steam library, and I know I haven't played all of them. Yeah, no, you're probably right. Across all the different systems, I'm sure I've got there. But I feel like 300 would last. Well, how long has Abject Suffering been going?
Since January of 2013.
So at a very aggressive pace, that's 5 years of gaming.
Mm-hmm. Well, also remember, we only do a half hour of the game.
Very fair.
Yeah.
So that you extend it even more.
Ben?
I think maybe what I would do is similar to like Valve. I would do the Abject Suffering, but then I would make you guys start playing good games on Abject Suffering.
Oh, but see, Jack actually puts in a cutoff is the thing.
Yeah. Not of everything.
Man, I think I would do favorite game, but I don't know which game I would pick.
Yeah, that's a thing. This would also require us to declare a favorite game.
That's tough too.
Yeah. David?
Okay. I think I'd probably do a workaround where it's like Sega's like top 50 games or whatever like that. See if I could find something like that.
Well, yeah, favorite game, just, you know, whatever, is a different answer than favorite game that you're only ever going to be able to play again. Like, right, I feel like that constraint changes my favorite.
Yeah, the latter gets to a weird like desert island kind of thing. So what you end up doing is like it would have to be something that you have previously expressed a large amount of admiration for. So like Dennis, mm-hmm. I would believe if the game you ended up strapped with was XCOM, I wouldn't believe it if you said like Minecraft or, you know, something that was
this is true
that you picked specifically to be perpetual, right?
This is true. No, that one's got pretty high replayability, so maybe my answer's the same.
Yeah. David, which one would you pick?
I feel like probably favorite game, especially if like there was some sort of skate patch for like if your favorite game was Destiny, I feel like Destiny 2 counts. But, you know, especially if there's that, but probably even if there wasn't.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a slam on Destiny 2 right there. Backhanded compliment.
And to represent Jala's perspective here, she says the Abject Suffering titles for much the same reason as me. She likes variety.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Greg writes, would you rather play one of the versions of Desert Bus for 10 hours or the original Broken to Hell release of Driver 3 for the PlayStation 2 that never got patched for 10 hours?
Driver what was 3, broken in Driver 3?
Driver 3. I played a little bit of this, but I can't recall. But you're committed for 10 hours of bad driving action anyway. I would say Driver 3 again because of variety.
Yeah, well, I feel like you can at least go on a rampage, right?
It's like a bad Grand Theft Auto clone kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say Desert Bus because if I'm playing Desert Bus for 10 hours, I'm probably doing it for a charity drive.
Ah shit, you made me into a monster. You made me into a monster, Dennis.
I was gonna say Desert Bus because I could play 5 hours of it, drive off the road, and then go do something else while it plays their other five.
So. Oh damn. Oof. David?
It's the non-charitable answer for it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with Driver 3. I feel like if you put me in an open world and give me a gun, I can probably find some entertainment for 10 hours.
Yeah, and Greg also doesn't stipulate that it needs to be 10 uninterrupted hours.
I feel like that's assumed.
No, it's not. Nothing is assumed.
Put it in writing or get out.
Yeah, I want everybody to be as lawyerly as possible with these things.
I love how we're going with like the monkey's paw approach to this.
You always have to be ready. If you're not walking around with a monkey's paw mentality, I don't know how to help you. Okay? Because you have to be ready. You have to be thinking around those corners because that monkey's paw is going to get at you. And the thing is, a monkey's paw don't have to be a monkey's paw. It don't have to be shaped like that. Anything could be a monkey's paw, okay? I'm holding on to a straight edge right now. Yeah, monkey's paw. That's why I'm not wishing for anything.
Uh-oh.
That's why the models in Drivers 3 look so horrible, is they're actually all secretly monkey's paws.
Yeah, just they're just crawling around pretending to be humans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you just wish for a functional game, and you don't get it.
Well, to be fair, though, the monkey's paw, you always get what you ask for.
But not what you want.
Technically functions.
Yeah.
Hasn't crashed yet.
And Jala's perspective is she would choose the broken game because, and I didn't think of this, there is a potential for strange errors. Mm-hmm. So you can find some fun bugs. Let's see. Roop asks, when was the last time you said you care about someone? After the last week or the last month.
I was going to say, I live in a house with other people, so it's right. Not constant.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I care about you. Boom! 1 second ago.
Oh.
I talked to my dad today, so I told him I loved him when I hung out. But,
Yeah,
so I think my parents just left on some, like, super long trip through Europe, so probably when they left.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, okay. That is all satisfying answers. What does Jala say? Let's see here. Kissed her mom on the top of the head and told her that she loved her before walking out to go back to work. That is very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So we all love our family.
Yep.
And no one else. Don't even yeah. stop.
Thankfully you made the cut, Dennis.
Oh, wow. This sucks. Jonathan writes, would you rather have soggy socks for a month or no showers for 2 weeks?
Ooh.
Oh. Okay, so this is very particular to me because I work from home and I can be very selective about where I go. I'm going to say the no shower for 2 weeks. It would suck, but not as much as soggy socks.
So I feel with the soggy socks, are we assuming that you're not going to get, like, gangrene or whatever?
Right, like, right. So if we're assuming a no trench foot guarantee,
yeah,
then yes, I would say you are not going to. Maybe you can take them off and dry your feet on occasion. Let's say 5 minutes. This is not in here, but yes, I'm going to say there is some kind of maintenance clause for no trench foot guarantee. Yeah.
No, anything that the adjective squidgy could be applied to, I am a hard pass.
No. No.
Which of those are you talking about, though?
Oh, socks.
Okay.
I guess you would be a bit squidgy after no showers for 2 weeks, too. But there are situations where a little more, like, naturally you would not take showers for a while. Like, I've done, you know, hiking in Peru, and that was, I think, 4 days, five mm-hmm. days. So I can, assuming I can fill that time, yep. Cole, you and I are on opposite ends of the spectrum. Like, you're like, I'm probably, like, control where I go and keep myself reasonably clean for 2 weeks. I'm like, I can probably go somewhere where it won't matter that I haven't showered for
right,
2 weeks.
Right, right. If I could plan ahead and modulate the amount of physical activity that I would do. You know, like the not bathing for you know, long stretches of time. It's a thing that, you know, was a thing in the past. It sucks. I do not feel like a human unless I have taken a shower, perhaps multiple showers in a day, depending on the season and, you know, if whether or not I exercise that day.
I mean, it's summer in Cincinnati. You are in a bog everywhere.
Right,
so.
Right. So you're definitely doing like a morning shower and a late afternoon shower.
Well, I feel like, you know, with the whole, like, this being, you know, something that used to just be a thing, like, you also have, like, thousands of years worth of, like, ways that humanity has developed to deal with this.
Yeah. I mean, we also have air conditioning. So.
Well, yeah. But I mean, also things like, you know, like, dry conditioner is a thing because people used to not wash their hair. So,
right,
like,
right. Yeah. So yeah, I would definitely say no shower for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think I'd go with that.
Ben?
All right, I'm going to revert to your lawyery requirements for how they phrase this. This says, would you rather have soggy socks for a month? It doesn't say you need to wear the soggy socks.
Oh, damn.
So I'm just going to go with that option.
Oh man, we got pawed.
Oh, you bastard.
Very good. Let's see what Jala says. Jala says no shower for 2 weeks. She is a runner on endurance and intimately acquainted with the vast number of blisters that incur with wet socks for a full month. Screw that.
I love, though, the fact that she's apparently entirely okay with, like, the effects of being a runner and not showering for two.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's so gross. Let's see here. Wow, all of these are would you rathers. Okay. Mike asks, would you rather spend a month as, okay, there are three options here, a hollowed enemy in Dark Souls.
What does that mean, by the way?
So they're basically like zombies.
Okay.
Yeah. But they can't die. Okay. A Goomba on a Mario game, or a pedestrian in a Grand Theft Auto game.
For me, this one is clear Goomba. I feel like it's been proven several times in the Marioverse that Goombas have rich inner lives and families and can just really make great contributions to society.
So what are we considering canon here? Are we considering the Paper Mario games?
Would you not consider that canon?
Oh, yeah. So it says a Mario game.
Does Mario have canon?
I'm not really, no. Yeah.
I definitely think there's a high variability in this. It depends on which Goomba and in which Mario game, because it could be like a very dangerous proposition if you're the first Goomba in Mario 1.
Or what if you're the Goomba whose just job is to like walk off the cliff over and over again?
Right.
But you could be like an NPC Goomba in like a cute, like, I don't know, current Mario game where you're not even, don't even have a chance of dying, you know?
Yeah.
Be a Goomba in the New Donk City party scene.
Yeah.
That would be great.
That'd be wonderful. So it says, a Mario game. I think you get to choose. I think you get the menu in front of you.
Then, I'll do that.
See, I feel like, again, this is non-monkey's paw, but I feel like the spirit of this question is one of the Goombas that's explicitly an enemy.
What percent of Marios do you think die to that first Goomba in 1-1? Like, it's got to happen with some regularity.
Are you taking games that are actively being played into account, or are you taking I sat down the controller and left the game running?
I'm gonna say actively being okay. played, because I know I've done it at least once. Like,
yeah, I have no idea. Oh, like a bunch of little kids play Mario games.
Yeah. So even then, it's Goomba.
I think with this, I think I would go with probably the Hollowed in Dark Souls. Just because, one, you're explicitly immortal.
Mm-hmm.
And two, they just, like, a significant number of them just seem to kind of be chilling.
chilling by repeatedly banging their heads against a wall.
Yeah, I mean, there are some of those.
Don't kink shame.
Okay. I stand here chastened.
I do have to say, this will a little bit maybe tip my hand for the grind, but I would much rather be a pedestrian in a GTA game than a NPC in or whatever in Mad Max.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
At least I probably am not going to, die of lack of water.
Ben, how about you?
If there's a Goomba in the New Donk City party scene, which I'm rewatching right now to see, then I would be that. If not, then I'd just be a pedestrian in GTA.
Yeah, I'd go pedestrian as well, because, it's a whole city.
You have a chance of running away.
Yeah. You have an option. That's a month. I could survive for a month.
Mm-hmm.
Hollowed enemy is what Jala says. Sounds more interesting. More adventurous.
Sounds more smelly. I think we're learning quickly. Jala is going for the smelliest option on each of these. That's my working theory. We'll see.
Juan says, would you rather work a soul crushing job and be able to make ends meet, or a low paying job that allowed you more free time to chase your dream before that too is crushed? Asking for a friend, shifty eyes emoticon.
How real do you want us to be with these answers?
Yeah, this is getting into advice more than anything.
Go yeah. for a dream job. Do it.
Yeah, I would say so too.
I'm living proof I had going for a dream job go as horribly wrong as possible and still came out the other end in a much, much better place than I was on the corporate soul crushing side.
So, although, to be fair, and grant this is strictly from the vice thing, I have no idea where one's friend's situation is. you also are a straight white cis guy with a college degree and a wife that could probably support your family if you had to.
Yeah. Yeah. or in general, like I took a pay cut by going independent. However, I am enjoying having more time. That would be vastly different if I had anybody depending on me.
Yeah. Now, assuming that the dream does get crushed, this becomes a much tougher question.
Yeah.
I haven't drank nearly enough to handle that tonight.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, with the soul crushing job, I did that. I came about as close as it's possible to come without being there to, like, suicide. So it can be really bad. Obviously, right. Not every soul crushing job is that, but, like,
right.
Definitely, like, serious depression was a result in that situation.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
They're got real here.
Yeah. There are very, very many variables. I think that money can figure itself out. It doesn't always. It can figure itself out. You know. Yeah. That's what I would that is what I would say with a lack of other knowledge.
Yeah, I think it's totally dependent because, like, you know, there's a big difference, there's a difference between a job that's a bad job versus a job that is, like, you know, truly, there's a whole bunch of factors.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any input, Ben, or do you want to stay away?
No, I would say, you know, try and do both if possible. You know, like, if you can't make ends meet, absolutely can't following your dream, try and do the soul crushing job for as small amount of time as possible. And then do your passion on the side maybe, or I don't know, but get out of there before your soul's actually crushed though.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You only get one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jala says, go for the dream, but you know, who knows how accessible that luxury is. Let's move on from this as quickly as
we can. When you are a billionaire after going and chasing your dream, I want you to give a shout out to the level for inspiring you. That's at least,
yeah. Three-fourths.
Yeah.
Four-fifths.
Marisan asks, what is a good game to play this summer? I'm trying to think of games that are coming out this summer, and all that comes to mind is Vampyr. So, like, as far as, like, games that have come out this year, I don't know, God of War seems pretty good.
A game where you are a creature who must hide from the sun would be, like, a thematically interesting summer game. I know. I mean, Warframe is always the right time to play Warframe.
Yeah. Yeah, playing an online social game like that, like Monster Hunter would probably be pretty good. Like, if you know other people who are doing other people who have maybe like a little bit more free time. Although, like, I am learning this as an adult. Summer becomes like a crazy time for like going and doing stuff. So who knows if you can get together with people. To play.
So maybe like Into the Breach, like something fairly portable.
Yeah.
I think a game to play in the summer should be Summer Games.
The Atari game that is like the Olympic game stuff?
The 1984 Atari Olympic game. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I was more fond of California Games because that had a kind of fun hacky sack game in it.
Oh, there you go.
What do you say, Ben?
I think I'd probably double down on Vampyr. I think that'll probably be the hot game of the summer.
It'll be the summer jam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that makes sense. Is summer game really, or summer games really your answer, Dennis?
Yeah, because I can't think of anything else.
Let's see here. Adam writes, would you rather Nintendo retired the 3DS or release a second screen add-on for Switch so you can play both Switch games and 3DS on one console?
Those don't sound mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
My vote would be for retire the Switch and just double down on the 3DS.
Come on, man. Clearly I love my Switch. So they're going to do it anyway. Like, they're going to retire the 3DS. I don't know.
Why not 4DS?
I honestly have I have no idea how that second screen thing would work. Yeah, I like having them separate. I think that they are two very different devices, and I don't know that you could backfit it.
I think it would be cool if they added the functionality where you could play on your TV and the Switch, where your Switch is the bottom screen and your TV is the top screen.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
I vote for that.
Do it like a Wii U kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a second screen add-on. It's called the TV. Gosh.
Well, no, you have to have your Switch docked in order to play it on the TV.
That's true.
Yeah.
It would need a workaround. Ooh,
design flaw. I guess I'm thinking of the Wii U. Yeah, they have a second screen add-on. It's called the Wii U. Gosh.
And nobody bought it, so.
Yeah. So maybe I'd rather the first.
Yeah. So Ollie's question is actually very similar to Juan's, so I'm not going to ask that one. Sorry, man. It was just we did these.
Technically, I'm kind of doing the first one now. I'm working for a startup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chase your dreams, people.
David writes, would you rather give up single-player games or multiplayer?
Ooh.
Multiplayer, no question.
Give up?
Yeah.
Question. Can I give up only single-player games with no multiplayer components? Or if there's like a campaign mode and a multiplayer mode, am I locked out of campaign mode entirely?
So what I would say is, if it is a single player game that has a multiplayer component or mode, if you try to activate the multiplayer component, it sets your system on fire.
See, but my lawyer side,
play with it on fire.
My lawyer side says I could find enough on either side of that divide, single player games with multiplayer components or whatever, to satisfy. Yeah. But this is a really tough one.
What is the Souls series?
I mean, you can play the Souls series in offline mode. It will simulate multiplayer, but like there are no other humans involved.
So would you be able to play it though?
You'll play it in offline mode.
You can do either. Yeah.
No. One other question while we're lawyering this. Can you solo in an online game if you choose multiplayer?
No. If there are other people there, you can't.
So, like, the way I'm thinking of it is, like, with The Last of Us, if you choose single player, you can play the single player game. If you choose multiplayer, you can only play the multiplayer game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in between.
I got to do multiplayer,
if you're
guys.
Playing multiplayer and none of your friends are on, you have to pick up group.
Never mind, single player.
So Dennis, you said you would give up, you said I would go multiplayer. Does that mean you would choose to have only multiplayer games to play, or you would give up multiplayer?
No, I guess I would give up single player.
Okay.
I think just because if games are a vehicle to hang out with friends a lot, so giving that up is tough.
Mm-hmm.
Could I stream the single player games?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Wait.
Oh,
what?
That makes
it's
it
a loophole. It's a loophole. Like I wouldn't say like could I play like so if you asked could I play a single player game with other people in the room watching, I wouldn't say no. I see streaming as an extension of that.
Ooh, I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah, I think it would be single. I'd give up single player.
All right, I feel confident about this. I would keep multiplayer, give up single player on the condition that I could watch let's plays of all the single player games.
Oh,
yeah, there's
nothing in the middle ground.
That.
Yeah. I think I would give up multiplayer to single player. I could still play board games and stuff with friends, I think.
No. So. All games.
What?
It doesn't say games.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to play tag with my friends anymore.
No.
Oh, no.
You in a tag league?
Wait, yeah. Is that something you do often?
All the time.
I have so many restraining orders.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of times it's asymmetric, but you know.
Yeah. Just trying to get a game of tag started. It's like trying to get the wave started in a stadium.
Right. Then, yeah, I think I would have to choose the Dennis answer. I would have to give up single player games and just watch people play them and feel very sad.
God damn. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. No, I'd give up multiplayer. I got to have my stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just can't give up like magic and board games and like, I don't know, bowling or, you know,
bowling is single player.
I wouldn't want to give up bowling with friends then, I guess.
Yeah. So if the stipulation was video games, then you would give up multiplayer.
Yeah.
All games, yeah. You would give up single player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's that is an edge case that wasn't accounted for.
Mm.
So I'm
a monkey pod.
we're up on time. I'm just going to do a very quick one here, that we can answer very, very, very briefly. Steven writes, what you drinking? Dennis, what you drinking?
Nothing.
Yeah, I was trying to remember if the part where I covered this was on or off air. But
no,
I'll,
it was in the green
again. Bears repeating.
Uh-huh.
There is a Rheingeist rosé ale called Bubbles. It is bright pink and it is delicious. And it tastes exactly like it sounds like. And I made a vanilla ice cream float with that this evening. And it was delicious. It was like the only thing I needed was sprinkles. that would have completed the ensemble.
Yeah. If you end up putting sherbet in that, well, fuck me. I'll just go get this and put sherbet in it. How about that?
There you go.
I'll do it on stream.
I know you're crossing dangerously close to IRL territory.
That's fine. Whatever.
No one returns from there.
Nope. You said nothing, David?
Yeah, so I'm drinking nothing, although I am going to just cheat and I think what last weekend before we had a company outing to a local distillery.
Mm-hmm.
that it's St. George Distillery, and it was actually really cool because they were don't make whiskey, it was kind of, but make pretty much everything else. They were the first and maybe still the only distillery in the U.S. that makes absinthe. Also they are the and this is a whole nother like thing, the, are you guys familiar with the Long Now Foundation?
No.
So basically, they're a like a Silicon Valley nonprofit that's designed to be like promoting long-term thinking. So like, you know, how are we going to tackle, you know, climate change and long-term as in like millions of years, like storage of history and information, stuff like
just
that.
Just a bunch of guys in a room going, we're fucked, we're fucked.
Well, and interestingly enough, one of the big ways they fund themselves is they have a bar. And which is hilarious. It's apparently a really great bar, but this company also, like, one of the things they do is makes like bespoke alcohols for them. So
nice.
What's this distillery called?
St. George.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, how about you? What you drinking?
I'm drinking water because I was sick yesterday.
I'm drinking Gatorade because I was sick last week.
Man.
Yeah.
Going around.
Well, I just had.
Did you hear about that bug that could be passed over the interweb?
What?
Yeah.
So did you hear about that bug that could get passed over the interweb?
What about it?
I coughed it's into going my microphone.
I coughed into my microphone, and then Duckfeed 2 went out.
Oh, okay. Yep. We're done. Duckfeed 2 is the... Nope, I'm not going to clarify what Duckfeed 2 is. So, yeah, go ahead.
Real quick, I realize we're moving on, but I wanted to highlight Bill Darrow had one that was, would you rather communicate via the Witcher method of, you know, you're given a dialogue option, but the actual text is written by a random duck feed host? Or or would you rather do the Soulsborne format where you can only do gestures and like ad lib style messages?
Yeah, you throw it on the carvings. Hello.
So and I don't know. I think the first one would actually be pretty entertaining. It's probably what I'd go with. And also, I seriously think we should do a stream of that sometimes.
Well, so I went to Whose Line Is It Anyway about a week ago, I'll say. Okay. They had like a live show in the Taft Theater in Cincinnati.
Ooh.
And it was hilarious, but they did the thing where there's like a bunch of random phrases on pieces of paper. So that's what we need. Just every duck feed host, or maybe we'll have people write in random phrases that we distribute to the host, and then we have to read it on air at random spots.
That would be very funny.
I'm just imagining Call Your Brother being like the random freak out option from LA Noire.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like if you're drawing from the pool of duck feed hosts, I think that in general we are all pretty good natured. If you like, just understand that Chris is a factor in that. And
he's a bomb thrower.
Yeah, you can't, like, you can't count on him. You can't count on him treating you well.
But whatever happens, it'll be entertaining.
Right. Yeah.
I think I'd be in for that.
What does Jalas say to that one? Soul style. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. I will be cataloging the rest of these, and we'll do a cleanup at some point. I have like just a text file with a bunch of these that I need to get collated.
I'm sorry. We just need to use the next submerse and convert. Next submerse and converse to do that.
Yeah.
I'm so. Seriously. I think you may have convinced me to pick up Subnautica.
It is so good.
It's a sweet
one
game
of us.
the only thing is, like, I've somehow managed to like flee most of shed most of my phobias. But like, the water is still a big one.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's a scary game, but some people don't find it scary. I don't know. Yeah.
We've established that like Jala may or may not be like the female incarnation of Aquaman.
Oh man!
I didn't know you were going that direction. I thought you were going to say she was fearless of the underwater, which I think she is.
Well, that's what I meant. Okay, the. Like, there's got to have been at least one incarnation of Aquaman that wasn't awful.
No, I'm looking at the answer sheet here, and the answer is no, they were all awful.
Well, thank you, everybody. If you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast on Monday afternoons. And those are posted by Dennis and or Jala.
The grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, what are a couple things you've been playing?
Sure. So, a crap ton of things, actually. So I think probably by far the bulk of my time and probably the best spent of my time has been I got back into Bloodborne.
Ooh,
in
ooh.
A fairly big way.
Neat.
So, it's there's so much to talk to. I went from like being kind of stalling out right before Vicar Amelia.
She's a wall, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm now into. I'm working my way through the cursed chalice. Dungeon, the one you need to like unlock the route for that.
Uh-huh.
I in the expansion I need to beat the Orphan of Kos.
Good God. And wait a minute. Let me clarify this. So you got past Amelia? Okay, so you got past Amelia and you are all the way up to being almost done with the DLC. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. and then in the main game, I think what is it? Mungo's wet nurse or whatever is the next thing I have.
Yeah, Mergo's wet nurse. That is very close to the end of the game.
Yeah, so that's kind of like I got to that point and was like, especially since I knew that like apparently once you beat the game, you can't go into the DLC right away.
Yeah, it does. It does a Dark Souls 1 style and dumps you right back to the beginning of the game in New Game Plus.
Right. So I kind of went to that. So and then I also like got into the Chalice dungeons in a big way.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it's been interesting. It's also interesting. I'm now at Souls level 160.
Okay.
Which is fairly overtly for basically anything other than the Chalice dungeons is just blatantly overpowered.
Right. Like Orphan of Kos, I think like you want to get to that about like 125 or something like that.
Yeah. So that one I'm actually having some trouble with just because like that's a fight that is very explicitly designed to be like the enemy is just ultra high damage.
Yeah.
And that's like the one thing you kind of can't just power your way past, like literally the rest of the bosses in the expansion, I could regain system faster than they could damage me.
Right.
So, which I mean, you know, it's one of those things where like I reached the point where it's like, okay, it's now very much more about the story than it is necessarily the gameplay to a degree.
Uh-huh.
But the Chalice dungeons are still often maddening, so that's the thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been really interesting. You know, I started playing right after they released Bloodborne on PlayStation Plus. Uh-huh. And that's been really interesting because just the raw number of people playing has kind of breaks some of the asymmetric multiplayer systems.
How so?
So like normally in like the Souls games, you'll see like one of the ghosts, say maybe like once in like an hour of gameplay, one of the you know what I mean, the little like seeing what another player's doing at that time.
Yeah.
Whereas now like it's not uncommon for me to like see someone, you know, run by, do their thing, like turn the corner and see a completely different person, ghosting.
Too many ghosts.
similarly, like it's less so now that, you know, now that I'm like pretty late in the game, but yeah. Through most of the game, like any trap or, you know, any, you know, secret passage, whatever, was generally marked at least like 3 to 5 times. So it was just kind of funny. Similarly, some experiences like if you imagine how about how like populated in terms of, you know, ghosts and dead whatever specters and messages your average like Soulsborne game is, that's approximately how populated any of the non-random Chalice dungeons are.
Okay.
So that's just kind of weird. But yeah, so I mean that's been fun. It's been weird. I don't know. The actual storyline itself is continues to just go ever more like off the rails.
But that's an endearing thing about it.
Yeah, overall, like, I don't know. I'm really interested to see, like, I don't know. I feel like the one thing is, my one concern is I feel like there's some, like in a Soulsborne game, I feel like you can't count on it. You can't count on From to ever, you know, tie up any given like plot point or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in order for me to say like it was a good story, there are some plot points that I think would have to be tied up.
Right.
You know, and that's my only concern with it. And I would say like the biggest thing being just like they have a really interesting world, and I feel like you know, do a really good job of you know, fleshing out, you know, the various, you know, factions and mythos and you know, goings-ons and stuff like that. I feel like the one thing that still is a little bit rough that I feel like needs to be kind of filled in some is like just like the general thing of like what the hell is going on. Like,
I mean, so like if you get so the story in Bloodborne is ultimately better explained than the story in Dark Souls at large. It operates more on a fundamental level. Also, they explain the same thing like in four different ways, which is very strange. Ends up being a little bit unsatisfying, but you can pick and choose whichever one works better for you. The process of getting the true ending and also what happens in the true ending gives a little bit more insight. And additionally, yeah, like a lot of the lore speculation, if you go outside of the game and read about it, ends up being a little bit more satisfying than in the series as a whole, just because this is a standalone.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think the two big things for me is I feel like the sort of like Plague of Beasts angle, I feel like would be well served by like, at least, you know, maybe not, you know, not necessarily needs to be like, you know, neatly tied up or whatever, but like needs to have some sort of, you know, thing. And I feel like the big other thing is like, I feel like all of the factions, you know, like very have well established kind of their motives, what they're doing, you know, how they interact, stuff like that. But I feel mm-hmm. like they all have the like mumble, mumble, mumble profit. And I feel like at least some of that needs to be filled in.
Have you gone to the upper cathedral ward and the choir?
Yes.
Okay.
I would say the big thing I would say actually is spoilers is with the church, I feel like there has to, you know, if you look at like a traditional Lovecraft, it, you know, the you know, cultists, stuff like that, like it's fairly understandable, like, oh, like clearly this is a horrible idea, but like I can see the logic of like, you know, like, hey, we're doing this for power, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I feel like there needs to be some sort of like, what was your end game here? Like, what was the outcome you hoped would happen?
So
that would require people to be sane.
well, yeah, and that's, but I mean, I'm saying like even an insane thing, like there's just no, I know, like I'm interested to see how you know how it goes, because right now I guess I'd say some of it just comes across a little bit like mustache twirly.
So I would say go ahead and beat it. Mm-hmm. Additionally, if you are able to or want to, look up a document called The Pale Blood Hunt.
Sure.
By a soul or a Bloodborne lorister called Redgrave. Okay. That like it's a little lengthy, but that is as good of a summary of kind of the motives of the movers and shakers and how they line up as you're probably going to find.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. One thing I'm really interested to see is where they go with the like in terms of like some of this is in terms of me like kind of arriving at my like kind of my interpretation of a couple of these things. It's still not 100% clear to me, like, how much of this stuff is operating off of, like, dream logic. And, you know, I think it's fairly clear that at least some of it is.
Right.
And so I'm interested to kind of see where that eventually goes.
Mm-hmm.
But, so that's been interesting. I ended up going with the quality build, what's it? Ludwig's Blade.
Right.
Pretty much.
Quality build, for people who aren't aware, it's equaling out your strength and your dexterity, or whatever Bloodborne right. decided to call them
right,
for arbitrary
exactly.
reasons. Yeah.
So I am a little disappointed. I feel like, you know, I that's also what I did in Dark Souls 3. And in that, there were still scenarios where, like, for certain, say, boss fights or enemies, you could, you know, like, spec your, you know, a weapon into, like, one of the elemental, you know, upgrade paths. And, mm-hmm. like, that actually be a good idea. Whereas for this, like, The two other big options are either, like, Arcane or Blood Tinge, which is more or less firearm-based.
Right.
And, like, neither of those are even remotely viable.
Yeah, those are very specialist kind of things.
Yes.
So that is was, for a second playthrough.
Yeah, that was a little bit disappointing, although, you know, not a deal breaker, so...
Yeah.
I do like some of the weapons in the expansion do get a little out there, so that's kind of fun.
You mean the amygdala arm, and also, yeah, and also the giant pizza cutter, yeah.
Yeah, giant pizza cutter is pretty awesome. I like the beast cutter just because, it, you know, makes, I think, one of the cooler weapons from the base game actually viable.
Mm-hmm.
What
else have we been playing?
So other than that, let's see. I've played some of Far Cry 4.
Okay.
That is just a spectacularly poorly conceived game.
Far Cry 4 or Far Cry 5?
5. Whatever the most recent one is.
Okay, the one that is set in Montana.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's interesting in that, like, I would actually, like, disagree with what's kind of been the I think the most you know, common, like, critic complaint of it. It is, like, it not engaging with you know, the political issues that it supposedly raises.
Uh-huh.
I think that's actually kind of maybe more you know, says something about the people that are kind of making those statements, in that, like, I mean, to make it to say it as incendiarily as possible, I think it's a lot of that is people that basically see, like, oh, everyone that disagrees with me politically is basically the same, right?
Okay.
And it's like, this really isn't a game about, and never was a game about, like, the militia, white, you know, white nationalist movement. It's predominantly the two factions are basically a cult and preppers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of that is kind of misguided. However, what is really problematic is the fact that basically the game, as you do anything, you build up resistance points. And once you build once you reach certain thresholds, that's when you'll have kind of the run-ins with the various bosses, and then ultimately the actual final, like, basically you have to then, you know, eventually you build up and face the boss of, like, one of the regions.
Is that the thing that triggers, like, you getting kidnapped and taken
and
into
a... And that's the problem, is the fact that they are non-optional.
Okay.
And they can, they're not optional, you know, so once you unlock them, it forces you to do them semi-immediately.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Once you beat them, their area becomes almost completely safe. Any outside of anything that's explicitly like, here's an enemy base you haven't cleared out yet. Mm-hmm. There are no just like wandering enemies. And then also, it's actually possible to miss some of the story missions.
Okay. Oh. So you just, you trigger this arbitrary point thing and then it rushes you to kind of a miniature point of no return within an area.
Right.
Yeah.
And the issue with this is like, it wouldn't be too bad if like they tied directly, you know, getting the resistance points to the actual story missions. But instead, basically anything in a previous game that you would have gotten experience for, you now get resistance points for. So like if, you know, if like you see a group of enemies and they've got, you know, someone hostage, if you save that hostage, you then gain resistance points.
Mm-hmm.
So it basically becomes a Far Cry game where you go around trying as much as possible not to do all of the random stuff that's around.
Right.
Which you might recognize as being the exact opposite of, you know,
of every other
Far Cry.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, so that's problematic. On the other hand, I think one of the interesting things is, despite although I kind of ragged on some of the reviews, like there is some legitimacy to like the storyline probably could have engaged more with, you know, some of the issues it's raising.
Yes, but I mean, it feels a little like to me, sorry to interrupt, it feels a little bit like exploitative to kind of have the trappings or be in the neighborhood of some of the stuff that is genuinely concerning to a lot of people. And pull every punch.
Yeah. And yeah, that's, I agree. Like I said, like my previous stuff was kind of the like as controversial way to state it as possible. Realistically. Yeah. I think the truth's in the middle.
Right.
I think on the other hand, a lot of the side characters, ironically enough, are like really well written and really interesting.
I've heard that, yeah.
It really varies just from like, you know, like one of your early allies is a like the local pastor and is, you know, very well written, very likable, you know, just very badass. You kind of, one of the preppers you meet up with does a really interesting job of like, you know, on the one hand, you know, he's kind of a crazy prepper.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's like very much like, you know, his family has basically abandoned him.
Mm.
And, you know, like there is some, you know, some pathos to it.
Yeah, like
and similarly, you have a lot of you know, really cool your allies you can bring with you. A lot of them are really likable.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dog, which is always the right option.
Right.
Like, he is just like his in-game class is like the good boy.
Really?
Yeah, that is like each of the guys has their class, so you know, one's like, you know, the sniper, stuff like that, and his is just the good boy. So one of the characters that I actually think is kind of interestingly written is the person who's kind of the chopper pilot specialist is kind of the stereotypical like cougar.
Okay.
But you know, I'd have to see how you know, someone who's, you know, more kind of in touch with some of the, like, I don't know, culturally sensitive, or, you know, what I mean, writing is. But it kind of seems to me like, you know, a lot of the writing for it does a really good job of kind of threading the needle of, like, being funny with that, but not being exploitative.
Okay.
You know, similarly, you know, just in terms of, again, like, interesting characters that's kind of a shame or wasted. The person that's your sniper is, like, a, you know, female Afghanistan war veteran.
Mm-hmm.
Who's like a local celebrity, and like that's, you know, that's not a a character background that's all that common.
Right.
So you know, it's interesting. There's definitely some weird like tone shifts.
I've heard that it, like, on occasion it just veers into like, oh, this is trying to be a Saints Row game now.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I would say not, for the most part, not more so than, like, Far Cry always has.
Okay.
But on the other hand, like one of your allies, actually the one that, like, I prefer to use, it's somewhat implied that the, cult forced her to eat her parents.
Okay.
It's like, it's, you know, it's one of those things where, like, sometimes it takes a really weird veer to, like, super, super dark.
Yeah. Huh. How's it play? Like, how's the shooting? How's the getting around? Like, are you still dealing with, like, a bunch of outposts throughout this? Like,
still a bunch of outposts. You know, overall, it's, you know, pretty par for the course. The kind of in keeping with the theme of, like, it being set in Montana, there's a lot more emphasis on, like, the random NPCs, like, that are on your side, like, aren't completely useless in a fight.
Okay.
So it can be kind of, so there's a lot more fun situations where just, like, because of, you know, your resistance members joining in, like, fights can just, like, escalate very much out of control.
Hmm.
So one of my favorite, actually, like, just random throwaway dialogues is after one of these fights, one of the guys goes, "Huh, it's almost like everyone suddenly realized I also own a large number of automatic weapons."
Huh.
So yeah, I mean, I would say the gameplay is kind of, I would characterize as being kind of the good side of the Call of Duty, in that it's not innovative, but it's just overtly fun, if that makes sense.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any wrap up thoughts on that?
No, that's about it.
Cool. I'm probably going to have us move on for time reasons.
Sure.
If you've been doing other stuff, we can hit it in the coming weeks.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. I've got something new.
What do you got?
Yeah. I just today on my drive home here, I picked up a Nintendo Labo.
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. This is awesome.
By which you mean you shook down a homeless person for the cardboard box?
And I felt no regret about it.
Dang.
No.
Nintendo has changed their business policies.
No. So this is I'm decidedly not in the target demographic. I'm neither a child, nor do I have a child, but I do kind of have a curiosity and an interest in the direction Nintendo is going with this stuff, and this is so crazy new that I kind of wanted to get my hands on it and play with it. So I've only done one build, the simplest one. I made the remote control car, but I'm really impressed with this as, like, a product.
Oh, does it, How does it work?
Yeah, I feel like...
Explain the black magic.
Okay. Remote-controlled car is significantly different than, like, most of the applications I've seen to date are fairly obvious, like, what if this was the same video game thing, but, like, now it looks like a thing, whereas remote-controlled car, it's a big departure.
So they call it a remote-controlled car, even though it is more accurately described as, like, a remote-control... robotic cardboard bug.
Okay.
Like literally there are no wheels. Like if you look at it, I'm holding it in front of me right now. It doesn't have wheels. It has like these six little legs that come off of either side. And the entire
killbot.
Kinda, yeah. like if you shrunk this down, it would look like a lice or something like that, or a louse, I rather. But it is a cardboard housing for the Joy-Cons. And you slide, you know, one Joy-Con into the left and one Joy-Con into the right, and you control it with by holding the Switch itself and using the touchscreen. The crazy thing about it is, so the way that it works is by the vibration. So if you press up on the right side of it, you control it almost like a tank, right? It will vibrate the right Joy-Con and use the HD rumble feature. It'll vibrate it in such a way that, you know, the right side of it moves forward, making it, you know, go in a circle that way. Again, much like a tank control, if you press up on both, it makes both of them, vibrate, and it'll go straight. And that is kind of the way that it goes. You can make multiples of them. So if you had extra Joy-Cons, you could control like two of these things. And what's neat, and my understanding is that most of these little games or toys work in kind of a similar fashion. What's pretty neat about it is there's like an extra level of kind of complexity underneath the hood. Like, you know, the base version is just kind of the arrows that you press to kind of steer this thing, with a little bit of like interface chrome around it to say, hey, this is a, you know, this is a remote control, you know, it's a remote control for your car. You press a button, it opens it up. You can change the hertz, like the actual frequency that they vibrate at, to like change the speed, or like if, you know, if it starts like going off balance, like slow down one of them so it'll go straight again. You can like set lap timers. And also it will use the infrared camera or the infrared sensor on the inside of one of these things. On the inside of the Joy-Cons, to give you like a small little, like almost Game Boy camera style view of what's in front of it. So like you can, you know, you can actually like navigate by looking at that screen from the thing's perspective.
Wait, but you say, is this infrared, in a format? Is this Predator vision?
It is like green tinged. I don't know what it is. It's very low res, but like you could tell, like I put down guitar picks. And I just followed a bunch of those around in a little path.
Huh.
What were you going to ask, Dennis?
So I was going to ask, hold on a second, it's left my mind. So I was curious that you talk about all these detailed inputs and stuff being laid out. Is it in the format where someone who knew what the hell they were doing could crack this wide open and build a bunch of stuff on top of this? Or is it still pretty kind of black boxed the way that Nintendo usually operates?
It's pretty black boxed. Like they're like, I don't see this being very, very hackable, or, you know, even, I mean, it's about as hackable as anything else. I've not seen like demonstration videos of somebody like getting into the Joy-Cons and, you know, working out a way to use their HD rumble, you know,
right.
Like I just haven't seen that. So it's hard to tell. Like you get this thing and it comes in.
So,
oh, go ahead.
Actually appropriate. My alternate, news story for this week was going to be one that came across Hacker News, that all current Nintendo Switches have a unpatchable exploit that makes it possible to run completely arbitrary code on them.
Huh.
Hey, sweet.
Yeah. So that might be the case. And also it brings in, so like when you buy this thing, like it's like a little briefcase size box, you know, just with your sheets of perforated cardboard inside of it, and also just like a case. Like you actually put a game inside of this, and that contains all of the build instructions, and then also you know, the programs that you run to like interact with these things. Like it is the actual mm-hmm. game. I got the variety kit because I'm not interested in stomping around as a robot or whatever. but yeah, so I've only done the cars. I'm about halfway through the fishing pole build, and I'm excited about that. And I am working my way up. I want that piano, guys. I need that piano so bad.
So talk about the experience of actually putting this together.
It's actually really, really cool. I'm trying to excise the word actually. It's really, really cool.
We have established earlier that you are the IKEA master.
Yeah, I did go home this weekend, A, for a doctor's visit, but B, specifically to build build my mom's office. She turned one of the rooms in her house into an office, and I am the assigned flat pack furniture assembler, strictly because I am the only person in the family who will read the directions. I don't have any particular talent aside from just
being able to read directions.
Yeah, yeah.
I do realize that's like most of every job, right?
So these are very, very well done instructions because they're presented like as a video that you advance through, and it is done step by step. It gets very, very granular. Like it will always remind you like, hey, pre-crease these particular, like basically pre-crease everything on this sheet so that when it comes time to put it together, it'll go together correctly. And it's very easy to get ahead of it. Like, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I can intuit how this goes together. So I'll just, you know, do it and then catch up. And then if I messed it up, work it backwards. But it's really cool because it's not just a video. It's actually all 3D modeled. So, as it's folded, you know, like as it shows the instructions, like, hey, fold it this way. If the angle that they choose is not, you know, to your liking, you can use the touchscreen and actually like rotate the way that it shows, you know, like the way that it's showing. The production values are predictably high, but it is, very, very well designed instructions, which doesn't sound exciting, except I could see this being frustrating for a small kid or for parents who are trying to work through it with their small kids. So like the quality of that technical writing actually has to be on point to make this a good experience. Mm-hmm. To make the build itself, because, you know, like the majority of the fun is going to end up being the build, right?
I'm really hoping that the I don't know, postmortems on this like get translated into English, because I think that sounds like something that could be really fascinating to read, like how they went about, you know, developing these systems and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I just want to hear like the revision process for like getting the instructions down as good as they did. It's written in like a really friendly tone too. Like it's never like condescending. It's never, you know, a kind of officious.
Why do you keep failing?
Yeah. But it's just really neat. And like, I don't know, I'm going to have a bunch of cardboard crap around the house when I'm finished with it, but it's, you know, I can see a lot of possibility for it. So.
Have you thought at all about? Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I'm curious to know how long the cardboard will last. Like, if this holds up like a year from now or not.
I don't know. It's it is not very thick cardboard. It doesn't feel flimsy. Like, it doesn't feel like it's gonna fall apart when you touch it or anything. Mm-hmm. I expected it to be, you know, kind of like extra corrugated or whatever. Like, it is basically, you know, picture like the thickness or rigidity of maybe like four pieces of cardstock stacked on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, and also the durability of one of these things in my home would be very different than the durability of it in Dennis's home.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
have you had any thoughts about how you might use some of the functionality apart from the intended cardboard? Like, so, okay, I've got this set of controls for making them rumble intended for the RC car. would you ever consider, like, oh, I bet I could make something using that set with a different...
Are you asking me if I'm going to use my Switch to make a sex toy?
You know, I wasn't going that direction, but I think now I am.
Answer the question, Cole.
Answer the question. No, I have no ambition.
Gotcha.
These are expensive, man.
To be fair, Joy-Con is the most sex toy sounding name ever.
Yeah. So, I don't know. So the piano is the final boss for this thing. It says that it takes like 3 hours to put together. I doubt that, but it does have a lot of parts to it. So that'll be a weekend project, I think.
That does sound fun that it's like a Lego project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never done like papercraft either. I know that's all the rage with the kids and stuff, but.
What is papercraft? Is that the like origami type stuff?
Yeah. I think like origami, except you download the templates from the internet and print them out, and then you make little paper sculptures out of them. It is distinct from origami in that I think tape and glue is in bounds. Yeah. Whereas origami, it all needs to be the folds. Yeah. And that's all I want to talk about. I've been doing a bunch of just like dipshit mobile stuff, but I don't really feel. I don't really feel that it's necessary to bring that to this until I do more of it and figure out which of it is dipshit and not. Just travel games.
Is interesting dipshit versus uninteresting dipshit.
Right. Yeah. Ben, what have you been playing?
I don't have much to talk about. I did start playing Subnautica this last week after watching Dennis play it for a little bit last week. Game's still good. I'm trying to speedrun it a little bit. Kind of. I'm at like 6 hours. I'm still a ways away from like beating it. Basically the bottleneck is like scanning certain things. Mm-hmm. But it's still a pretty fun game. It's satisfying to build a base. I'm building a very like miniature base, really compact. So I like that aspect of it. And I found a good area to place it. So I'm happy about those things on the second run.
And that is non-random. So once you find a good area to place it, you're always going to be able to go back and find that area again in future runs.
Yep, what correct. Makes an area good for a base? A
lot of resources, a lot of variety of resources that are close to a single area. Yeah.
Do you always have to collect the resources on your own, or eventually can you automate it?
You always have to do them on your own, I believe. So, yeah. There's, I guess, like the order in which you pick certain tech is somewhat different. So there's some tech that makes the game a lot easier. So, like knowing what to rush and what not to rush is sometimes helpful. It's so like, for example, like the Sea Glide, you've already gotten that one, right? Like that's makes movement.
Nope.
Oh, never mind.
So I think, so we, oh no, Dennis hasn't gone yet. I assume we'll discuss the, anyways. Yeah.
I'm good. Okay.
It sounds like I need to say where I am with this game. Although where I am with this game is on video. To tell you guys what else it's safe to talk about.
Uh-huh.
So I segue into this. I don't have anything else, so we can segue into this.
Yeah, sure. I streamed it last week, obviously, as a holdover or to tide us over until this episode. And really enjoyed my time, really enjoyed having Ben as a Sherpa. Ben, your self-restraint is amazing.
Most of it's lag.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone watching was on a bit of a delay, and my quality was not always the highest, but it was a good time. Mm-hmm. But just, letting me die of radiation.
That was lag.
That was lag. and then also, I think you waited a long time when I found whatever it was, Pod 3. Before actually directing me to look closer. And I very nearly walked away without finding something that that you helped me help make sure I found.
Yeah, and to be fair, some of our viewers helped us out as well. Or
I think my favorite part of that was just seeing the viewers like flip tables over the knife. Like that was that was awesome.
I stated at the beginning of the stream that my like mini goal was to kill the largest thing I could in the time I had in the game.
Oh, I did not hear that. All right.
Yes.
that makes more sense now.
Oh, so I'm maybe thinking of a different thing though. I'm thinking the part where you had figured out that like one of the predators liked shiny things. And and you're like, so you had like jettisoned all of your like, gold and I don't know, silver or whatever. And you're like, I can't figure out how why it keeps chasing me. And someone in chat is just like, shiny knife. Shiny knife.
Oh man.
Yeah, it was a good time. I'm impressed at the amount of color in the game.
It is a beautiful game.
That was another thing that just struck me.
Clearly, though, some of those fish are designed by Apple.
Yeah. Because there is a big eye fish, so, you know.
Yeah, and it is the most Apple-looking creature I had ever seen.
Yeah, everything's got a little bit of veneer on it. Like, it's not trying to be hyper realistic or anything. But just even when you get down into where it's darker, and I was only able to do that in a very limited capacity, but even when you get to that point, everything starts glowing. It turns into a bit of a rave, at least the section I was in. So that was very cool to see.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
What technology have you unlocked so far?
Right. So I got the base building tool and the repair tool, which I figure are important. And I got a little stuck getting that repair tool because I had trouble finding silver and gold. And it just didn't seem like there was anything near the start or easily accessible that I could get to for that. But other than that, it was fun to just explore. There's a great diversity, not just of color, but of types of creatures and all this stuff. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So have you played it since last week?
I haven't because I want to stream it next time I play it. I feel like I've committed that far. It's probably worth continuing to stream.
Yeah.
As a side note, I tried streaming this as well over the past week just to see like what it would look like after the change of internet service. It was still choppy on mine as well, so I was kind of bummed about that. So probably an issue with the graphics card, for me at least.
Yeah, the one thing that I missed from streaming it was I'm sure there's a ton of subtle storytelling in terms of like reading the descriptions and like combing through your logbook and just because you are paying attention to the conversations you're having and trying to keep things snappy, I spent almost no time looking at anything written.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure there's stuff I'm missing on that front. Ben, you can tell me if what I'm missing on that front is notable enough for me to really want to not stream and instead spend more time like reading.
I mean, there's some like Portal-esque dialogue and stuff over the comms and stuff. But,
sure.
But they do a lot with a little. So like usually whenever you're getting a message from either a person or like the intercom that's not through the radio, usually it's important and usually or it's a joke and it's like a well-written joke. So
sure.
It's like one of those two things. So those are important to pay attention to. But like reading through the logs, I think that's kind of like if you are interested in that, it's there. But if not, then it's not a big deal if you miss it, I think. But it depends.
Yeah, it also seems that this doesn't seem like a game that would take very long to get through, so would lend itself towards, now I can play through again and actually listen to stuff.
Yeah, possibly. I can't remember how many hours I put in the first run through. I think it was somewhere between like 40 and 60, but I don't know.
Mind. 40 to 60 is a long game.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. I had it in my head that this was like a quick little bite-sized game, but that sounds pretty meaty.
Yeah,
it's a simple concept for a game.
That's a great way of putting it. Yeah, so I enjoyed my time, and I encourage people to go watch that. If you like this podcast, it's just this podcast with a little bit of video layered on top.
Or go play it.
Yeah,
either way.
Yeah, or go play it. Yeah, absolutely.
Do both at the same time. ¿Por qué no los dos?
When are you going to stream it, Cole?
I have no idea. I have been away from streaming for too long because of life stuff, so I need to get back into the usual stuff that I do.
Yeah, you got pretty consistent for a while.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to get back there. It's just weekends between Milwaukee and this home trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Played anything else, Dennis?
I have. So I played and beat Catherine since the last time we talked.
Oh, dang, yeah.
So the
you
puzzle
sure
game
beat
slash
Catherine.
Stop it. So the puzzle game slash horror game slash dating sim that is on PlayStation Now, which is how I found it. Cole, I thought I remembered that you played this game, but then I searched our archives and I could not find an episode where you were listed as having played it. So am I crazy?
Yeah, I've played this and heaped some praise on it. Although I forgot, or I wasn't woke enough when I played it back in 2011. There's some like real transphobic stuff in there that I didn't remember that I've read about recently.
I think there was an extended cut of the game that gets into some of that,
yeah,
in a way that is just simply not in the first game.
Okay.
So I think there, I remember reading that as well, or I haven't kept up. There was a trailer that hinted that maybe it could be in there, but like it wasn't definite. Like, oh, there's going to be some, or there could possibly be some trans related stuff in there. And people were kind of like, oh, I bet they handle it horribly.
Right. They haven't released the extended one, so you've played it more recently.
Yes, and there, none of the, well, there is like maybe one line that hints that, you know, it could go in that direction, but it's not developed at all, at least as far as I've played.
That is beside the point of whether or not you had a good time with it. For some reason I wanted to temper that conversation with like, oh, I had no
for those considerations being more relevant to discussions of games, so never a bad decision. So for anyone who isn't familiar, it is, like I said, a puzzle slash dating sim slash horror game, and the story essentially is you're kind of a deadbeat dude. You know, is I think 32. You've had a girlfriend for several years now. She's kind of the adult in the relationship.
She is responsible, Catherine.
Yes, Catherine with a K. Yeah. Which I wonder, is it kanji is the Japanese writing?
It's one of them.
Okay, there you go. So in kanji, I think there's also like some interesting play on how she's named that doesn't. Catherine is like the best approximation for it. So I'd be interested to see what that actually is. But so Catherine with a K, your current girlfriend, she starts talking fairly overtly about maybe thinking about marriage, which freaks you out.
Mm-hmm.
You go get drunk, have crazy, you know, running from stuff nightmares, and then wake up with this beautiful other girl in bed next to you that you don't remember how that happened.
Yeah.
And that sets off kind of just the dealing with that. Or trying to not deal with that is the central premise of the game.
Yeah.
And drives the conflict and story.
The girl you wake up with is irresponsible Catherine.
Yeah, and you don't find out her name other than the fact that the game is freaking named for her, so you kind of player know. You, the player character, don't really figure that out for a couple of days.
Yeah.
That their names are the same.
And the horror element comes from not just the nightmares that you have, but also this idea that these, you know, deadbeat, unattached, old, you know, not older men, but, you know, like just, you know, eternal bachelors are turning
millennials,
up.
Millennials, essentially.
Yeah. Just they're turning up dead all over Tokyo.
Exactly.
And it's like the deaths start getting closer and closer to Vincent, the main character, and his crew.
Right. And so there's a real kind of psychological aspect of, you know, the dream sequences are the puzzle piece of the game. But at the same time, you know, everyone seems to be sharing the same dreams and people are dying, but you know, is this really connected to this? Am I psyching myself out? Mm-hmm. And then if this is being caused, if this is malicious, who's behind it? And I thought they did a really good job, making that an interesting and, you know, I did not guess who it was ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big reveal for me. The other thing that they do really well is not paint. I like the way you phrase it. There is a responsible Catherine and there is an irresponsible Catherine, but it is not as simple as like good side, evil side.
Right.
Or maybe it's good side and evil side, but it is not easy at all to pick which side you want to be on.
Yeah. One of them represents more commitment and attachment and the other one represents more. There is not a way to describe the non-commitment, non-attachment version.
Freewheeling. The word they use is chaos,
right?
Which is fair, but I wish there was like chaos without the negative.
Right. Right. But one who is more in the moment, right?
Yeah. It's spontaneity, maybe.
Yeah.
So somewhere between spontaneity and chaos.
Mm-hmm.
and riding the line between those two, which has obvious perks or obvious, you know, excitement to it.
And also there's the notion that siding with her is either, it doesn't end up being physical, but like you are kind of doing emotional cheating on your long established girlfriend by going, you know, by doing the texts and stuff with, you know, mm-hmm. Chaos Catherine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I thought the game one, I want it because we were talking about translation a second ago. Whoever did the translation on this nailed it. Like the dialogue just is so good. It feels natural. Like you believe when it's four dudes hanging around a table at a bar that this is a conversation that would happen.
Yeah.
And I just really appreciated that, especially because, you know, some of the game, you know, trends a little bit anime in the way it handles some of the moments of like, oh no, the two girls that I am involved with are in the same room. Ah, so it's got that. Yeah.
It's made by Atlas and done by a lot of the people who were, who did, like Persona. So like probably got the same localization treatment that Persona games do, which is, you know, good. Like they did great. Well.
Vincent is clearly, his model was designed starting from jaw on the floor and eyes bugging out, and then they worked back from there.
Right.
but overall, they don't run too far with that. The game can be jokey and it can be lighthearted, but I think it brings a good balance to some very emotionally fraught subject material. And then I also thought I had really great things to say, you know, having finished the game, just about the wanting things to stay the same. Versus committing to any direction,
right?
Versus like, is which direction is good or bad?
Yeah.
I think it has less to say about that versus just trying to keep everything in the air, trying to, you know, not commit, or not choose a side, as it were. Actually going after something.
It ended up being, and I'm basing this on a 7-year-old recollection, but I remember being really, being really refreshed about it as just kind of a story about like, how is the definition of maturity kind of changed based on, you know, just the broader kind of like probably antiquated cultural assumption about when do you actually grow up versus, you know, the version of adulthood or perpetual adolescence that it shows and, you know, kind of presents as fraught here.
Right? Yeah. I mean, this is a game that you could very easily write an English paper on. And I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And the puzzling was great as well. Ben, I thought specifically of you and of Steven's sausage roll while I was playing. So the mechanics,
me and Steven.
Yeah. Catherine, Steven, you know, it's all the same thing. But the mechanic is you're climbing up a tower and you can climb up one block or one unit at a time. You can push or pull a block provided that you're standing on something next to it. And you can hang from blocks provided that you are going down to the one that you are standing on. You can't hang on the one above you. But then the blocks interact with each other in a really interesting way. So if they're stacked on top of each other, obviously they will stay stacked. And then if there is an edge of the block touching the edge of a lower block, it will stay stacked. But it will not stay stacked if the side of the block is touching a block adjacent to it. Does that make sense? So like if you're in the same row and your sides are touching, it will fall.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are above it and the edge is touching, so it's hanging over nothing, but just the edge is touching the block below and to the left of it, it will stay in place.
Okay.
Look up a video, all you non-visual medium listening to me talking people. Come on. it is just a way of interacting that is very counterintuitive, but has a very clear set of rules to it.
Mm-hmm.
Ever
evolving too. They had different kinds of blocks and
they do. Yeah. And so that it was like Steven's sausage roll in that way, and that like it is abundantly clear how the mechanics of Steven's sausage roll work, but it is just unintuitive in a way that really forces you to think differently. Catherine was the exact same way for me. Yeah. It kind of scratched that same itch.
Yeah. It also adds the complication of, if I'm remembering correctly, a time constraint.
I played on easy mode, so I did not have to deal with that too much. I did die to the timer a couple of times. So blocks are falling off of the bottom of the tower at set intervals.
Or you're being chased by monsters.
Yeah. And boss levels are being chased by a big monster. And each time, each boss is like a different representation of a part of Vincent's life that he's dealing with subconsciously, which I liked a lot. So that was the mechanics of it. scratch the same itch as other puzzle games that I've played and liked. But overall, I kind of, especially I didn't connect the dots that it was 7 years old. I knew it was older, but for that time, then this is really a game with something to say that approaches mature material in a mature way without being all Debbie Downer. Like, it's still got a light heart, I think, at the core of it. But it deals with some very mature stuff in a very mature way at the same time. So about an 11-hour game to get through. It was the perfect, like, rental, quote-unquote, game. Yeah. And I'm really glad with the time I spent with it.
Yeah, it's a pretty game, too.
It is. It held up well. The aesthetic holds up well as graphics have gotten better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Catherine with a C for me at the end. So,
I mean, if that's a C, wow.
Yeah, well, and that was the funny thing is, like, even the game was great at making me feel like I was like, aha, I figured you out. I know what choice I want to make. And then immediately feeling like it was the wrong choice.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it just jerks you back and forth. And that's obviously by design, but it does it very well. So, yeah, I think you can go through. So I got a Catherine ending. I think there's like 8 endings to the game, or maybe 9 now.
Did you just say you got a Catherine ending in a game where both of the available endings are Catherine?
I got a C Cat. You didn't see the way I pronounced that.
It broadly breaks down. There are endings that you can get that are like neutral, where you don't end up siding with either of them.
Yeah, neutral, one side or the other side.
You just become a lonely options. Old man.
Effectively, a lonely old man in space. Not to spoil anything. I'm happily going to go back and look at the other endings just out of curiosity. But to our earlier conversation, I don't feel the need to actually play all the way back through the game to get those.
Yeah,
I just want to see. And they do a pretty good job of balancing. There are a couple choices at the end which dictate which ending you get. Mm-hmm. And then the choices you've made throughout the game dictate the degree of that ending you get, if that makes any sense. Which I thought was a very elegant way to handle kind of the multiple endings on a game where you're very invested in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the big one that I played this week with Subnautica last week as well.
Okay. Well,
I'll throw in an admission that I tried to get God of War this weekend, but it was sold out at my local Target.
Oh, dang. I've got it.
Nice.
It was never sold out on the PlayStation Store.
That's true.
Yeah. No, I got it at a gift card at Best Buy that was burning a hole in my pocket. So, yeah. Cool. So I think that is going to be everything. Dennis, same thing for you with David. If you had other things, can you save it for next week?
No, that is it.
Okay. Do you all want to button it up?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. This one has been a little bit longer than usual, so I will keep this short. I will say, if you came out to see us in Milwaukee, thank you very much. We enjoyed meeting you. Me and Gary, who is not here. I'm sure the level people would have been happy to meet you as well.
I met you. You just didn't realize it.
Yeah. You
secretly a ninja.
So. As opposed to overtly. Awesome. Well, you know the usual stuff. You have Patreon, you have Facebook, you have telling friends, Apple ratings and reviews, etc. But otherwise, you know the usual thing. Just come back next time. We'll have more for you. Anyway, I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
I've been David Moneysmith on the internet.
And I've been Ben Merkel at Merkleby on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, Ben, what you got?
I did not write down anything, but I will say there was they melee brawl.
Yeah, I had that.
Okay. What else did you have, David?
I had, I think you just invented Yu-Gi-Oh! Beyond Two Cages.
Yes.
Or potentially Cage Uncaged.
I just have I just have Uncaged.
Intermittent Bursts. Monkey's Paw Mentality.
I also had Monkey's Paw Mentality.
No Trench Foot Guarantee.
I also had No Trench Foot Guarantee.
Or You Got Pawed.
Oh, there's a lot of good ones this week.
Dennis.
Yeah, I had the Melee Brawl. It was just an early one. And then I also had Beyond Two Cages. And after that point, I didn't have anything because Beyond Two Cages is my favorite.
Okay. Okay, so the one that has the most votes is the Melee Brawl. However, we've done a few Smash Brothers related ones.
Well, it was also like we overtly called it out when it happened, so of course everyone wrote it down.
Right, yeah. I'm fond of No Trench Foot Guarantee.
I'm fond of that one as well.
just because it is so, like, I mean, like, in my heart of hearts, I think of Monkey Paw Mentality better.
Yeah.
But No Trench Foot Guarantee is very much in the spirit of us lawyering all of those would you rathers.
I feel like that's kind of my feeling. I also it's probably more different than kind of our normal ones.
Oh yeah, also I mean, it makes reference to trench foot.
I think it's a solid toady contender.
Toady.
Yeah. Cool.
Excellent.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to bed.
Right. Yeah, nighty night, guys.
I'm going to go have supper because.
Oh yeah,
the earth is round.
I know. Think about cat food again.
With that.
All right, take care, everybody. Thank you so much. Bye.
See you guys.
See you.
Bye.